This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We'll begin with Inspector Thorne this week. We'll hear the Golden Girl murder case from August 3rd, 1951. After that, it's a case for Dr. Morell, an alarm call. His story from April 23rd, 1957.
And now, the National Broadcasting Company presents Inspector Thorne in the Golden Girl murder case. Tonight, the National Broadcasting Company presents the exploits of the spectacular young Inspector Thorne of the Homicide Bureau. Those investigations rank with many of the most celebrated ones in the annals of crime fiction. An investigator smart enough to claim he is dumb and modest enough to believe it. Tonight, Inspector Thorne turns to the Golden Girl murder case. The story opens in the private drawing room of a train speeding into New York City as we see Roberta Ralston, the golden girl of stage and screen, in the arms of her husband of a day, young and handsome Larry Holt. And the fabulous Roberta, whose career has brought her fame and fortune, is saying,
"Oh, how lucky I obeyed that whim to visit my old hometown, Larry. Otherwise, I wouldn't have met you, fallen in love, and eloped with you all in a few short weeks."
Oh, Roberta, the miracle is what a dazzling girl like you could see in a plain Joe like me.
Oh, I'll be trying to tell you all through our honeymoon, Larry.
Oh.
Are you glad we're going to my lovely brownstone house in New York?
I don't care where we go, Roberta. Where this train takes us, as long as I'm with you.
Darling, We'll have such a wonderful honeymoon.
The door.
Who's that? Remember me, Larry? The girl you left behind you?
Well, Janet. Janet Mills. What are you doing here on this train?
Who's got a better right to wish you and your bride good luck but the girl you were engaged to for 3 years? The girl you jilted practically at the altar?
Oh, now, Janet.
I suppose you'd like me to take it lying down, wouldn't you?
Janet.
I suppose after 3 years of loving you and waiting for you, I'm supposed to cross it all off just like that.
No, of course not. You ought to know how tough it was for me to tell you, to write you that I couldn't marry you?
Yes. After 3 years, I get a letter. Goodbye, good luck. I'm marrying the golden girl of stage and screen, Roberta Ralston.
I feel rotten about it, Janet. And so does Roberta.
Oh, Roberta feels rotten, too. Yes, Janet. But things happen that way, and sometimes people get hurt. But you never get hurt, do you, Roberta? I'm sorry. I know how you must feel. You know how I feel. You, Roberta Ralston, you have everything, looks and fame and money. And I had only one thing in my life, Larry. And you stole him away from me.
Please,
you
Janet.
Saw Larry and you wanted him and you took him.
Well, that's too bad. Sure, I took Larry away from you. I won. So run along.
Listen, Roberta Ralston, I'm not going to let you get away with it. I found out you and Larry were going away on this train and I followed you.
Can't you get it into your head, Janet? Larry and I couldn't help it. We fell in love. We got married.
You don't know what love is. You never will. I hate you.
I don't have to listen to this. Larry, call the conductor.
Don't bother. I'm going. But don't think you're going to live happily ever after. You haven't seen the last of me.
And now, a few hours later, following the violent scene on the train, Roberta, the golden girl of stage and screen, and her bridegroom are in New York at her house. And we hear her say,
"Here we are, Larry. My dear, lovely brownstone house in the big city."
"Yes, Roberta."
"Oh, darling, don't be glum. We've got to forget Janet. Forget all our troubles."
"You're right, Roberta. So long, troubles, Sarah."
"That's better. Oh, here's the key.
I'll carry you across the threshold."
"Oh, my husband."
"Oh, kiss me, my wife."
"Now, put me down."
"Oh, there."
"Stop looking at me and look at the house. Oh, isn't it utterly lovely? So big, so beautiful. Come this way, Larry. I'll show you the drawing room.
All right, darling.
Now you go through these hangings into the library.
Say, it's awfully big. You could put my whole house where I live back home in this one room. But I guess when an actress makes a lot of money like you, she can afford it and deserves the setting.
Perhaps it's much too big, but I love it.
Oh, I want you to have everything you love, Roberta.
Follow me, Larry, and I'll show you the rest of the house.
Roberta! What's happened?
I'm dying.
Roberta! She's dead! Who's there? Stop! Murderer! Here, I'll get you.
Let me go!
Janet! So you got your revenge.
Let me go, Larry. I beg you.
You shot Roberta, Janet. I'm calling the police. I've got to call the police.
And now we see one of the most famous crime fighters of the day taking control. A man who looks like anything but what he is. The spectacular young Inspector Thorne of Homicide. With his assistant, Sergeant Muggin, by his side, the young black-haired Inspector Thorne is confronting a haggard Larry Holt and saying,
Mr. Holt, your marriage yesterday to Roberta Ralston was announced in the papers, so I know about that. I suppose you came here on your honeymoon?
Yes, Inspector Thorne.
Please tell me what happened, Mr. Holt.
We'd just arrived here. Roberta started to show me the house. I was following her as she went into the library. She passed through those red hangings. There were two shots. She fell. I ran forward. There were two more shots aimed at me, I thought. And then...
Yes, go on.
This is hard for me.
I know. Take your time.
Time won't help. You see, I believe I know who murdered Roberta, and I'm to blame.
You? How come?
Just a moment, Sergeant Muggin. I don't want my partner to rush you, Mr. Holt.
I'm sorry, Chief.
Now, you were saying you think you know who killed your famous actress wife. Who was it, Mr. Holt? Another man or another woman?
It was a woman, Inspector Thorne.
What's her name?
Janet Mills. We were engaged for a long time back in the small town where we lived, Carrollton.
And then you eloped with Roberta Ralston, the golden girl of stage and screen.
We couldn't help it, Inspector Thorne. We fell in love.
But Janet Mills didn't see it that way.
Jealousy's always a strong motive for murder, Chief.
Yes, Sergeant Muggin.
It was awful. Janet followed us on the train as we came to New York, threatened Roberta. I wish I'd never gotten Roberta into this.
Steady, steady.
Well, why didn't Janet shoot me instead of Roberta?
Maybe Janet didn't shoot anybody, Mr. Holt. A threat is not necessarily murder.
But after the shots, I heard Janet running away, and I caught her.
Where is she now?
I locked her in the next room, Inspector.
Come on, Sergeant Muggin.
Be easy on Janet, Inspector. She didn't know what she was doing.
I don't know what she did yet, Mr. Holt.
What do you mean? You think Janet is innocent?
I'm not bright enough to think anything yet. I just got here. Go get yourself a drink, Holt. You look as if you need it.
Thank you, Inspector Thorne.
I wanted to get rid of him, Muggin. Now, open the door.
Got you, Chief.
Janet Mills, I'm Inspector Thorne. This is Sergeant Muggin.
You can't arrest me. I didn't kill Roberta Ralston. I swear it. You've got to listen to me.
I'm listening.
I heard two shots and then two more, and I got scared and started to run away.
Where were you?
Behind the piano in the drawing room.
Hiding?
Yes, hiding.
I see.
No, you don't see, Inspector Thorne. It's true, I was hiding, but I didn't kill Roberta.
Who did then?
I don't know.
Didn't you see anyone, Janet?
No.
No? You were in the drawing room, behind the piano, and you didn't see a soul.
That's right, Inspector Thorne.
You must need glasses. What were you doing in this house?
I was out of my mind to come here.
Answer my question, Janet. You threatened Roberta on the train. You sneaked into this house and concealed yourself behind the piano. What was the idea?
I planned to plague Larry and Roberta. I thought I could get revenge by popping up wherever they went and spoiling their honeymoon, Inspector Thorne.
That's a hot one, Chief.
I know now. I was crazy, Sergeant Muggs.
Janet, how did you get into the house?
I found the back door ajar and came in that way, Inspector Thorne.
The back door, eh? Then you went into the drawing room and waited.
Yes, Inspector. It was only a few minutes before Larry and Roberta arrived. I watched them a bit, and
I was just going to come out and show myself when I heard the shots and tried to run away.
And all this time you saw nobody, Janet.
That's right.
Although the murderer must have been in the house.
I don't know where the murderer was, Inspector Thorne.
I do. The murderer was hiding behind the piano.
No, no, Sergeant Muggett. Wait. I did catch a glimpse of someone.
Really, Janet?
Yes, a man as I came through the door.
And was he short and fat with glasses?
I couldn't say.
I'll bet you couldn't.
You're a rotten liar, sister. Do we pull her in, Chief?
Janet will keep, Muggin. I want to see the body first.
Okay.
Don't leave this house, Janet, if you know what's good for you. Come on, Muggin.
I'm right on your tail, Chief.
Body's in the library, Muggin. Through these red draperies.
Yeah.
Ah, there she is. What an end for the golden girl of stage and screen. Two bullets and fade out.
Two bullets, Chief?
Yes, she was shot twice, Muggin. Look here. The other two shots went in another direction, hit this wall.
Those two bullets must have been meant for Larry Holt and went wild.
It looks that way. Check ballistics, Muggin, but I'll bet the murderer fired from behind those red hangings separating this room from the drawing room.
Yeah, and that just about nails down the jilted fiancé, Janet Mills.
Muggin, look at this pile of mail on the desk addressed to Roberta Ralston.
We're waiting for her to get back home, I guess.
Some welcome. Bills, bills, bills.
Why not? She was the golden girl. The papers were always talking about how much she made.
Evidently, she spent it as fast as she made it. Here's a bill for interior decorating, $10,000. Another $15,000 for a fur coat. A doctor, $550. Wristwatch, $1,200. Yeah.
Just don't tell my old lady.
What gets me is... some of these bills are months overdue.
Well, little old golden girl was out of town.
I wonder... hold on. Someone's coming in the front door.
Should I...
No, wait here, Muggin. I'll see who it is.
Okay.
How do you do, ma'am?
Who are you?
I'm Inspector Thorne. What's that bag on your arm?
Well, it's a shopping bag full of groceries. What business is it of yours?
I'm a police officer. What's your name and what are you doing here?
I'm not saying another word until I know what this is all about.
All right. I'll show you. Come with me.
Where?
Into the library.
If this is some
trick... Sergeant Muggin, step aside and let this lady see the body.
Okay, Inspector.
Body? Oh, it's Roberta. Dead. Murdered. Oh, my poor baby. My poor baby. Oh, how terrible.
Come along outside now.
Oh, yes. Oh, the sight of her lying there. She was so young and beautiful. I'll never get over this. Never, never.
I wonder.
What?
Somehow I think you're making more fuss than you feel.
What do you mean by that, Inspector Thorne?
Just what I said. Now, who are you?
I'm Polly Price. I was housekeeper and companion to Roberta.
Housekeeper, companion? I'd say you were an actress.
Well, you've got a good eye, Inspector Thorne. I was on the stage for many years before taking this job.
Where have you been, Miss Price?
Out marketing. I got a telegram from my poor Roberta. Her darling said she was coming home with her new husband, so I went out to stock up on food.
I'm pretty dumb, Miss Price, but the way I figure it, you must have been gone at least 2 hours. Does it take that long to buy that small quantity of groceries you're carrying?
Well, I... you've caught me, Inspector Thorne. I stopped off for a cup of tea.
Where did you have this tea?
Well, I might as well admit it. It wasn't tea. It was a beer.
Where did you get the beer, Miss Price?
Look here, you're barking up the wrong tree. It's perfectly obvious who killed Roberta.
Yes? Who?
Ogden Barnett killed her.
Ogden Barnett?
And who is he?
Ogden's the producer, who helped Roberta get her start on the stage, and that led to her getting in the movies. Then Ogden began to drink, hit the skids. Roberta let him live on the top floor of this house when she was gone. And sometimes when she was here.
You say the producer, Ogden Barnett, lived here in this house?
Yes, he did. And I'd like to know why.
What do you mean by that?
You guess.
I don't go for hints and innuendos, Miss Price. If you've got something to say, say it.
Inspector Thorne, doesn't it seem peculiar that Roberta let Ogden live here like that?
I thought you said Ogden gave Roberta her start.
Yes, but he didn't do that much for her. All he did was give her a little part in a play.
I see.
There could have been something else between the two of them, Inspector Thorne.
What do you suggest?
I wouldn't dream of suggesting anything.
It sounds to me as if you're suggesting plenty.
I'm only trying to help, Sergeant Muggins.
Then answer this one, Miss Price. If Ogden Barnett lived in this house, where is he now?
In some gutter, probably. Now, look, if you don't believe what I'm telling you, here's the telegram I got from Roberta this morning. It'll prove what I say.
It says, coming home with my husband, get out the welcome mat. Please tell Ogden Barnett and ask him to leave before my husband and I get there. And it's signed, Roberta.
When I told Ogden that Roberta was married and he'd have to clear out, he carried on like a regular madman. Said he'd kill Roberta rather than never see her again. Started to hit the bottle.
Did you see him leave the house, Miss Price?
No. I saw him go up to his room, and I figured he'd pack and be out by the time I got back, Inspector Thornton. He must have drunk himself wild and killed Roberta.
Which room is Ogden Barnett's?
Up the stairs, and the first right.
Come on, Sergeant Muggan.
Right with you, Chief.
She said the first door to the right, Muggan.
Here it is, Chief. Hey, that must be Ogden Barnett stretched out on the bed.
Yes.
He's dead, Chief.
No, Muggan. Dead drunk. And drunk or sober, Mr. Ogden Barnett was in this house all the time the murder took place.
Inspector Thorne in The Golden Girl Murder Case will return in just a moment. But first, tomorrow the new comedy team of Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding come to the NBC microphone in a full hour of light satire and nonsense sketches. Bob and Ray, tomorrow night and every weekday afternoon, Monday through Friday. Then on Sunday, there's High Adventure with the Saint. Then the Whisperer brings you suspense as he enters the underworld to solve cases which have baffled the law. Later, screen actor Lloyd Nolan comes to the NBC microphone as Martin Kane, Private Eye, a fellow who has the uncanny ability of being able to get himself into plenty of fast-moving, hard-hitting trouble. Then there's Mr. Moto, ace Japanese-American security agent, intent on preserving world peace while fighting those who seek to plunge the world into another war. Make a listening reminder to hear The Saint, The Whisperer, Martin Kane, Private Eye, and Mr. Moto this Sunday. Then Thursday evening, hear stories dealing in time and space and brought to you in future tense on Dimension X. Yes, for the best in summer radio entertainment, keep tuned to this, your NBC station. Now, back to Inspector Thorne and the Golden Girl Murder Case. When dazzling Roberta Ralston, the golden girl of stage and screen, is murdered a day after eloping with handsome Larry Holt, Inspector Thorne uncovers a situation seething with emotion. Janet Mills, Larry's jilted fiancée, is caught running from the murder house after the shots. Then the inspector meets Polly Price, an ex-actress working as a housekeeper companion to Roberta, and Polly accuses Ogden Barnett, a down-and-out producer who has been living in the murdered woman's house, of killing Roberta when he was told to clear out. Then Inspector Thorne finds Ogden Barnett dead drunk in his upstairs bedroom. And now, Ogden Barnett has been restored to consciousness, and we hear the inspector saying to him,
"All right, Ogden Barnett, what's your story?"
"I haven't any story, Inspector Thorne."
"I'll prompt you. Roberta Ralston, the famous actress, permitted you to live here, didn't she?"
"Yes, that's true."
"Why?"
"That's an embarrassing question, Inspector."
"I'm afraid you'll have to answer it."
"And I've had a string of unlucky breaks, Inspector Thorne, and I drink too much. Roberta was the most generous girl in the world."
"It would seem so. To take a man who has no claims on her and support him."
"I don't know what you're implying, Inspector Thorne. I gave Roberta her start in show business, and she was grateful."
"I understood you merely gave her a small part in a play."
"That was the part that made her, and she knew it."
"All right, we'll skip that. Go on."
"I taught her everything. I did. And if she were alive, she'd tell you.
Yes, but she isn't alive. So it's only your word.
It's the truth.
If it is, then it seems you felt you had a claim on Roberta. And how did you feel when you were given your hat and told to go?
Well, I was...
A short time before Roberta was murdered, Polly, the housekeeper, told you she was married and bringing her new husband here, that you'd have to clear out. Isn't that so?
Yes.
What did you do then?
Well, I took a few drinks.
Quite a few, I'd say.
Yes, Inspector. I was celebrating. And if you know everything, you know I was celebrating the last coffin nail in the heart of Ogden Barnett.
I see.
I loved Roberta. And now that she's dead, I don't care what happens to me.
The point is, did you kill her rather than lose her?
Kill her? I tell you, I loved her.
You say you took to the bottle in despair. But you could have taken a few drinks and killed Roberta.
Don't be stupid. I was blind drunk, out cold. I didn't even know what was going on.
So you say.
You saw me yourself, Inspector Thorne. How could I have killed Roberta if I was unconscious?
No doubt your intelligence is higher than mine, Barnett. But it doesn't take many brains to figure out that you may have gotten blind drunk after the murder, not before.
I didn't.
Maybe you hoped to cover yourself that way. You threatened to kill Roberta.
Who says so?
The housekeeper, Polly.
Polly? Huh. Polly might have shot Roberta herself. The hypocritical old bag was cheating Roberta right and left.
Cheating her?
Polly took care of the household, and Roberta never checked up on her. Over the years, Polly must have stolen a pretty penny.
Keep on talking.
Maybe Polly was afraid the new husband wouldn't be as trusting and open-handed as Roberta. Maybe she was afraid of being found out.
Could be. Oh, what is it, Sergeant Muggan?
We found the murder gun, Chief.
Where?
That's just it. We found it in Polly Price's shopping bag.
What? That doesn't make sense, Muggan. Polly was out. If Polly murdered Roberta, she wouldn't have brought the gun home in her shopping bag. What's the joke, Barnett?
That might be just what Polly wants you to think.
What?
Don't sell Polly short, Inspector Thorne. Do you know what her act was before she retired from vaudeville? She was one of the cleverest mind readers in the business.
Is that so? Come on, Sergeant Muggan. We're talking to Polly Price right now, and we'll see who mind reads who. Sergeant Muggan and I want to talk to you, Polly.
Well, what is it, Inspector Thorne?
This murder gun was found in your shopping bag.
In my shopping bag? Oh, that's silly.
Silly?
If I murdered Roberta, I wouldn't be fool enough to bring the gun home in my shopping bag.
That's exactly what I said.
You've got your wits, Inspector Thorne.
Don't try to twist them, Polly.
What?
You may have been a clever mind reader, and I may be a dumb cop. But if there's one thing I know about... it's murder.
Someone planted that gun in my shopping bag.
Maybe you did yourself trying to outsmart the police.
Is that so, Sergeant Muggan? And I say it was that jilted girl, Janet Mills. She must have put the gun in my bag.
Why, Janet?
My shopping bag was on the kitchen table, Inspector Thorne, and I saw Janet in the kitchen.
Step into the drawing room and wait there with Ogden Barnett, Polly.
Very well.
Come on, Sergeant Muggan. We'll see Janet. She's in the library with Larry Holt.
But meanwhile, in the library, we see Janet turning to Larry Holt and saying...
I want you to know this, Larry. I love you. If you love somebody, you do anything for them. Anything, Larry.
Please, Janet.
I understand you don't want to talk to me. Not now, anyway. But I want you to do something for me, to make it easier.
What?
I can't face them anymore, Larry. Not Inspector Thorne. I want you to turn your back, and when you look around, I won't be here.
No.
You owe it to me, Larry.
What?
Oh, Inspector Thorne.
Has something happened here?
No. No, of course not.
Larry?
No, Inspector.
All right. Janet, answer carefully. Have you been in this room with Larry Holt all the time?
In this room? Yes, I have, Inspector Thorne.
You never left this room?
Well, maybe I did for a minute.
Did you or didn't you?
Yes. I went into the kitchen for a glass of water.
Into the kitchen?
Yes.
Was Polly Price's shopping bag on the table?
Shopping bag? I don't remember.
I think you do, Janet.
Well, maybe I did see some sort of bag on the table. Yes, I believe I did, Inspector.
Did you put anything into that bag?
Put anything into it?
The murder gun, for instance?
The murder gun. No, I didn't even have a gun. Larry, you were here. Tell Inspector Thorne. Tell him.
Tell him what, Janet?
You saw me go into the kitchen, Larry. You can tell the inspector I wasn't carrying a gun, that I couldn't possibly have been hiding a gun or anything else.
Please, Janet.
Tell him, Larry.
I can't say what I don't know, Janet. I'm afraid I didn't notice one way or another. I'm sorry.
Come with me, both of you.
Where to, Inspector Thorne?
Through this door and into the drawing room, Larry. Polly Price and Ogden Barnett are in there. I want all four of you together.
But, Inspector...
Bring them along, Sergeant Muggan.
You heard what Inspector Thorne said, Janet. Get in there. You too, Larry.
All right, Sergeant Muggan.
Now what's going on?
You'll see, Polly. Now, all of you. Ogden, Polly, Janet, and Larry. When I first came here, I found this stack of bills on the desk, addressed to Roberta Ralston.
Well, what about it?
Just this, Polly. Roberta was the golden girl of stage and screen. She earned a lot of money, but also spent a great deal.
Everybody knows that, Inspector Thorne.
True, Barnett. But as a simple policeman, I'm interested in the money aspect of this case. In other words, who gets Roberta's money?
I can tell you that, Inspector. Certain stage charities get some, and the residue goes to Polly Price.
Is that right? Is it, Larry?
I don't think so, Inspector Thorne. You see, Roberta and I were flying to Europe after a few honeymoon weeks in New York, and we decided not to take any chances. We made wills in each other's favor.
You're lying, Larry. I get the money.
I'm sorry, Polly.
I'll sue you. I'll contest the will.
It wouldn't be worth your while, Polly.
I'm not going to lose all that money, Inspector Thorne.
I've checked Roberta's finances, Polly. An easy job, because in this mail, there was an urgent letter from the Internal Revenue Department about Roberta's taxes.
So what?
Roberta owes the government thousands of dollars in back income tax. So much money that it will consume all and more of her estate.
No!
Roberta Ralston, the golden girl, was broke.
I don't believe it.
Roberta threw money away like waste paper, Larry. She was prodigal, and she was generous.
I told you so.
Yes, Ogden Barnett, and now I believe you.
You're making it up. It's some ghastly joke, Inspector Thorne.
You can see for yourself, Larry.
Roberta was rich. I know she was rich.
Roberta didn't have a dime.
But she lived like a queen. I thought she had millions. How could I make such a mistake?
Mistake?
I...
You married Roberta for her money, Larry. And she was taken in by you because she was essentially gullible and never thought about money herself.
It's true. I love Janet all the time.
A fortune hunter.
Call me any name you like. I'm to blame for everything. Roberta's death and driving Janet to murder.
Just a minute. None of that. You're the murderer, Larry.
No.
You killed Roberta yourself and took advantage of Janet's wild actions to plant the murder on her.
You're wrong.
I suspected you from the first, because the two shots meant for Roberta went right to the bullseye, while the two evidently meant for you went so wide a two-year-old child could have shot them.
It's a lie. I didn't shoot Roberta. Janet, you were there. Tell them the truth. Tell them I didn't kill Roberta.
How big a fool do you think I am? You don't love me, Larry. You tried to put the murder on me, and now you think I'll lie for you.
Janet.
Inspector Thorne. Larry killed Roberta. I saw him shoot her. I saw him with my own eyes.
Janet's lying.
For the first time, Janet's telling the truth, Larry.
Yes, Inspector.
I knew Janet must have seen the murderer shoot Roberta because of the layout of this room. She was facing those red hangings. She'd have had to see the killer. I knew she was protecting someone. And it had to be you, Larry.
No, I...
But I had to break her down. I had to set up this little scene to reveal you for what you are, so Janet would tell the truth and quit shielding you. With her testimony, you'll go to the chair, Larry Holt. Take him, Sergeant Muggan.
With pleasure, Chief.
I was a fool, Inspector Thorne.
Not as big a one as Larry Holt was, Janet. Larry thought he was being smart to catch you and hold you for the police. He thought it would make it easier to frame you. The rat was caught in his own trap.
And so ends the Golden Girl murder case. The part of Inspector Thorne is played by Carl Weber, direction by Kenneth McGregor. The script was written by Carol Warner Gluck, based on the original radio play by Frank and Ann Hummert. This is Fred Collins inviting you to tune in again next Friday at the same time when the National Broadcasting Company will present Inspector Thorne in the Defrosted Refrigerator Murder Clue. Stay tuned for Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons on NBC.
About time this hotel got a new lift. That time I got a new job, too. This musty old dump will send me nuts. Now, what's the number of Lady Portlock's room? 24. Number 24. Morning, Lady Portlock. Still asleep, the old trout. Shall I draw the curtains, Lady Portlock? I hope it isn't too light for you. I brought you porridge, bacon, and eggs. Lady Portlock.
Lummy, she's dead.
The BBC presents A Case for Dr. Morell. The first in a new series of half-hour adventures by Ernest Dudley, with Cecil Parker as the famous Dr. Morell and Sheila Sim as his secretary, Miss Frail. Episode 1, Alarm Call.
There is no doubt that the criminal is a split personality, his mind unbalanced as a result of subconscious forces which constantly urge him onwards towards self-destruction.
Dr. Morell.
What is it, Miss Shawcroft?
Can you repeat that last point? I'm afraid I missed it.
You keep on missing what I'm dictating.
I'm sorry, but I'm so tired. Working late last night and having to be here again at the crack of dawn.
I'm perfectly wide awake.
But it's all very well for you, Doctor. You're just a human dynamo.
Let us proceed. I must finish these notes today. It's most important.
I hope you aren't expecting me to work till midnight tonight.
If necessary, why not?
Because if you're a machine, Doctor, I'm not. And if you think I can go on like this, slogging away till all hours, you've got another thing coming.
Miss Shawcroft.
I got here at 7 this morning and you expect me to go on...
In point of fact, Miss Shawcroft, you were 5 minutes late.
No wonder I'm the umpteenth secretary you've had since that Miss Frail left you. You're just not human, that's your trouble. Well, I am. I'm not made of clockwork, and I'm fed up with you treating me as if I was. So good morning to you, Dr. Morell, and goodbye.
Obviously suffering from a persecution complex. Now, where are those notes I was checking? Here they are. Mm-hmm. Oh, doubtless that will be Miss Shawcroft returning to apologize. I suppose under the circumstances I shall have to accede to her plea to be reinstated. So you've changed your mind.
Hello, Dr. Morell.
Miss Frail.
Did you think it was someone else?
I was expecting Miss Shawcroft returning to finish her work. Won't you come in?
Oh, I'm so glad you found somebody who also doesn't mind working all hours.
Yes. We'll go to the study.
You're sure I'm not disturbing you?
Indeed, no. I'm eager to know to what I owe this unexpected pleasure. Please go in. Sit down.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, I was under the impression that you were happily employed in Bournemouth.
Oh, no, I've left Mrs. Padmore. She's gone to live in Dorset with a widowed sister.
You mean you've come to ask if you can return to me in your former employment?
Oh, no. I'm sure you're Miss Shawcroft, did you say her name was? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure she's taking care of you very well.
Yes, quite.
No, Doctor, it's Baroness Beauville. She's dead.
Whom did you say?
She lives at the Wigmore Hotel just down the road. I worked there as secretary to the manager.
So near, Miss Frail, and you hadn't been to see me?
Oh, I'm sorry, but I haven't been there long, and we've been awfully busy, but about Baroness Beauville, look, could I tell you on the way?
You want me to come to the hotel?
Yes. That's why I rushed round to see you. Her death is a bit of a shock. Shall I get your hat and coat?
That's very kind of you.
I haven't forgotten where you keep them.
I'm gratified to know that you cherish some memories of me.
Here you are. Now, if we could hurry.
Thank you. So you're at the Wigmore Hotel?
Yes. Frankly, I don't care for it over much.
Don't you, Miss Frail?
Oh, could we please hurry, Dr. Morell?
But of course, my dear Miss Frail, certainly. I mustn't keep you waiting.
This is the Wigmore Hotel reception. Very good, sir. I'll send the papers up to you at once.
If anyone wants me, I shan't be available for half an hour.
Very good, Mr. Winter.
When will I be here? Miss Frail's been gone about 10 minutes. Ah.
This is Dr. Morell, Mr. Winter.
I'm so glad you've come.
Only too happy to oblige, Miss Frail.
We'll go up to the Baroness's suite at once, Doctor. Miss Frail has put you in the picture.
Yes, Mr. Winter. I told him what's happened.
It's on the second floor. I'm afraid the lift's a bit antiquated. It was a new floor waiter who made the sad discovery. He says he went into Baroness Beauville's suite by mistake and...
What time was this?
About 7:30. I went up immediately, of course. The Baroness Beauville had obviously been dead some time. Heart attack, I suppose.
Oh, poor thing.
Here we are. Miss Frail, Doctor. I'll lead the way. Have you informed the Baroness's companion, Miss Frail? Mademoiselle... Oh, her name eludes me for the moment.
Mademoiselle Rollin. No, I must do that.
I'll phone her at her flat. Well, here we are. I locked the door, naturally. This is the sitting room. The bedroom's through here. And the Baroness was found exactly as you see her now.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see. As you surmise, Mr. Winter, she's been dead for several hours.
Heart attack, of course.
That is a matter which the post-mortem will decide. These appear to be sleeping tablets by her bedside.
The bottle's half empty, and the top's been left off.
I had observed that.
Doctor, you don't mean that it's...
It's what, Mr. Winter?
You don't think it's suicide, Dr. Morell?
Not necessarily.
Oh, you think she may have taken an overdose of these tablets accidentally?
I say that it is not necessarily suicide, Miss Frail.
Oh, I see.
Thank heavens for that.
Why should you seem so pleased?
I'm afraid I was thinking of the scandal attached to the hotel. I'm sorry to appear so callous.
But it's your duty to have your hotel's good name at heart.
Well, that's why Mr. Winter sent for you.
Well, these tablets are doubtless of the barbiturate class.
I know Baroness Beauville didn't sleep very well.
The effect of a small dose of barbiturates are unharmful, but the deceased's external symptoms suggest a coma which could have been induced by an excess of the drug.
This glass has some milk in it.
Doubtless she took her sleeping tablets in it. Nothing has been touched, Mr. Winter?
Nothing. But if it's an accident, I...
Oh, shall I answer it?
Thank you, Miss Frail.
Oh, I'd better pick it up with a handkerchief.
Well, of course, if it makes you feel any happier.
Hello?
Baroness Beauville, your alarm call.
Oh, it isn't the Baroness, but thank you.
The Baroness asked to be called at 8 a.m. It's 8 o'clock now.
Oh, it's only the switchboard, Doctor. Baroness Beauville's alarm call.
Shall we go back to the sitting room?
Yes.
Very well.
The Baroness? Well, what happened?
This is Mademoiselle Rollin.
Monsieur Winter, is she...
This is Dr. Morell. I'm afraid that the Baroness...
I must go to her. She's dead. I know she's dead. Oh, what an awful shock for her.
Will she be all right, Doctor?
She is best left alone in there. For the moment...
What is it?
Well, this French novel here, open on the table. These sentences penciled underneath. Et maintenant, la dernière de mes amies est partie. La vie est vide. Je reste seul triste et seul.
And now, the last of my good friends has departed. Life is empty. Only I remain sadly alone.
Brilliant translation, Miss Frail. How should I manage without your invaluable help?
Oh, Dr. Morell, it's nothing.
I notice that the book is inscribed to Anthony Winter. Any relation of yours, Mr. Winter?
I am Anthony Winter.
You knew the Baroness well. The inscription is worded with some affection.
I met her in Geneva. She stayed at the same hotel where I was studying the hotel business.
I see. Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, she helped me to get this job as assistant manager here. She happened to know one of the directors.
I understand. I wonder if I might have a word with the waiter who discovered the body.
Of course. I'll find him at once and send it along to you.
Thank you.
Oh, poor thing.
Are you all right, Mademoiselle Rollin?
I had a strange foreboding when I left her last night.
Foreboding?
What time did you leave?
Just before she retired to bed.
About 8:45. I prepared her milk, set her alarm clock for 8 a.m., as usual, and left her reading.
Would that be the alarm clock that was by her bedside?
But yes.
You omitted to notice that it has stopped at 9:03, precisely, so that it must have failed to ring, as you set it.
But that's... It's never gone wrong before.
Doctor, what time did the Baroness die last night?
I should estimate between 10:30 and 11 o'clock.
Oh, I just wondered if it might have been at the same time as the clock stopped.
It is all so strange. My premonition, the clock stopping, and then early this morning I knew something was wrong. That was why I hurried here.
Well, Mr. Winter was going to telephone you.
You want to see me?
You are the waiter who found Baroness Beauville dead?
Yeah, of course. I never knew it was her then. I thought it was somebody else.
How did you come to make the error?
Well, you see, I'm a bit new around here. I was supposed to take Lady Portlock's breakfast in.
Who has a dog?
Yeah, a sloppy-looking thing that scratches the paint everywhere. I mean, I got her suite mixed up with this one, that's all. Number 24. Morning, Lady Portlock. Still asleep, the old trout. Shall I draw the curtains, Lady Portlock? Yeah, I hope that isn't too light for you. I bought your porridge, bacon and eggs. Lady Portlock. What? Blimey, she's dead.
It must have been something of a shock for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it certainly gave me a turn. Anyway, I rushes off to find Mr. Winter.
No one saw you come in? No one saw you go out?
No.
What is the number of Lady Portlock's room?
Why, it's...
34, Dr. Morrell.
Yeah, that's it. It's on the floor above.
And you mistook this suite for hers?
I know. It's, well, just one of them mental tricks.
I understand.
Well, will that be all, sir?
You may go.
Thanks.
Dr. Morrell, I have just thought of something.
What is it, mademoiselle?
This book. It was the one the Baroness was reading.
I had already noticed it.
But you have seen where it is open. It has been underlined in pencil. Et maintenant, la dernière de mes amis est partie.
I know, yes, I know. Miss Frail very kindly translated.
Then, do you see the significance of it?
Not especially.
What is it, mademoiselle?
But do you not know? Baroness Beauville has been very depressed these last few days. Ever since she received news of her brother's death in California. He was her last surviving relative. Don't you see, Doctor?
Oh, you think that was what she meant when she underlined that in the book?
That is exactly what I mean. I'm sure she did it deliberately. Dr. Morrell.
If you will take a glance, Miss Frail, you will see that there are many other passages in this book similarly marked.
Oh, may I look, Mademoiselle Roller?
Of course.
Why, yes. Yes, this page is marked and something underlined here.
I'm sure with your excellent command of the language, you will agree that these other marked passages have no significance.
La maison est tranquille maintenant. Le soir descend. Yes, it's obviously just something she marked for reasons of her own.
A form of eccentricity in which many readers indulge.
It is true, the Baroness was becoming a little eccentric. Now, I'm sorry that I have been rather sharp with her lately.
Ah, well, old people can become an irritation.
Ah, but one should not let them get on one's nerves. Only, I try to be so businesslike myself.
I know. I once heard the Baroness saying to Mr. Winter how very efficient you were.
Thank you. But I should not have overlooked the fact that she was old. Her mind was a little woolly.
Well, I'm sure you looked after her very well.
Ah, I should have been more even-tempered. But my nerves have been a little on edge. Oh, poor Baroness.
So, Dr. Morrell, it seems that it was an accident, all right. You see, Mademoiselle Roller, Mr. Winter was a little worried, too, that it was, that the Baroness...
I am positive that she did not take her own life.
How do you know?
When Baroness Beauville found that her alarm clock had stopped so that she couldn't be sure of waking at her usual time, she asked the switchboard to give her an alarm call. She would hardly have gone to that trouble if she was about to commit suicide.
Of course. It was an accident. That's what you mean, isn't it, Doctor? She took a second lot of sleeping tablets, forgetting that she'd taken some before.
It was not an accident, either.
What?
But it must have been.
Never in all my experience have I known anyone to take an overdose of sleeping tablets by mistake. It is a popular notion, but in fact it is invariably a premeditated act.
But you just said it wasn't suicide.
Quite, Miss Brayle.
Then if it wasn't an accident, and she didn't take her own life...
One other conclusion only remains. Murder.
Murder?
But this is madness. Who would want to murder her?
Dr. Morrell.
What is it?
Listen. There's someone in the next room. I can hear moving about as if it is somebody. Doctor, it can't be.
The Baroness? It would be most interesting, not to say a miracle.
Oh, I'm frightened. Who can it be, Doctor?
One way to answer that question is to go and see.
Doctor?
Yes, Miss Gray?
You don't know who it may be.
I find your concern for my welfare quite touching.
There is someone. Then go in there, Doctor.
It would appear to be unnecessary. Whoever it is coming out here.
Ah, there you are.
Oh, Mr. Winter. We thought it was...
Why, did I startle you?
Oh, we heard someone in there.
Well, I thought I heard the sound of somebody myself as I passed the bedroom door in the corridor. I went in, but it wasn't anything. Forgive me if I scared you.
There is always a natural explanation for what might appear to be supernatural.
I met the waiter. I hope you got all you wanted out of him, Dr. Morrell.
He was most informative.
Good. I asked him to bring some coffee.
You're very kind.
Thank you. Mr. Winter, I'm afraid that...
What is it? Has something happened?
Oh, it's too dreadful.
The Baroness, Dr. Morrell thinks that she was murdered.
What?
I don't think, Miss Frail. I know.
This is simply ghastly. What do we do?
Telephone the police.
The police? But, well, I mean, how do you know it's murder? Who did it? Come in.
I'm sorry, sir, but...
Oh, what is it?
Well, you did say coffee for four, didn't you?
I told you there were four of us.
Well, I'm very sorry, sir, but I'm a bit confused. The shock, I still haven't got over seeing her.
Oh, yes, yes, all right. Get the coffee, will you?
Yes, sir, right away, Mr. Winter.
Just a moment.
Yes, sir?
Perhaps you would take me down in the lift.
Yes, sir.
If you'll forgive me for a few moments, I want to speak to reception.
Of course, Doctor. We'll wait here.
Shall I come with you, Doctor?
I think I can manage, Miss Frail.
Well, the lift this way, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, this is a fine carry-on, isn't it, Doctor? Poor old girl. Fancy a thing like that happening to her.
In the midst of life, we are in death.
Eh? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Here, I don't mind telling you something.
Don't you?
You see, I'm a bit worried.
In what way?
Well, I'm afraid Mr. Winter suspects me of having bumped her off or something.
Whatever makes you think that?
Well, you know what suspicious minds people have, and he wouldn't mind getting one in at me.
You mean he has a motive for revenge?
Well, I knew him at the job he had before he come here.
You were both employed at the same hotel?
Yeah, Geneva. In Switzerland.
Yes, sir.
The Baroness stayed there, too, for a bit. But as I was saying about Mr. Winter, there was some funny business at this other place, and he left.
What do you mean by funny business?
Well, I don't know exactly. It was all hushed up. But I do know he went all of a sudden. Here, I'll press the lift button, sir. Oh, I didn't notice the lift was here all the time. Right, Doctor.
Thank you.
What's happened?
It would appear that there is no lift.
Blimey. Well, you might have fallen clean down the shaft.
That was rather what I was thinking.
I knew this would happen. I kept on telling them this old lift's a death trap. Well, the door's opened all right, sir. So I thought the lift was there. Oh, that put me in a cold sweat.
Never mind. It's only a matter of a few stairs down. I'll walk.
Well, you're a cool customer, Doctor, and no mistake. I better go and tell Mr. Winter before there really is an accident. You might have been killed.
Is something wrong?
Oh, you're there, sir. I didn't hear you.
What's the matter, Dr. Morrell?
Nothing serious yet.
It's this blooming... Oh, it's the lift, sir.
Yes, yes.
Well, I pressed the button and the door's opened like you see, and Dr. Morrell was about to step in.
Good.
Only there was no lift.
Good heavens, Dr. Morrell. Why, you might have fallen to your death.
It is quite a drop.
I'm most terribly sorry.
Well, it's so old, Mr. Winter. I've complained about it two or three times.
All right, leave it to me.
Yes, sir.
Go along and get that coffee.
Very good, sir.
I'll continue on my way.
This is most distressing. I can't tell you how it's upset me.
It might have upset me.
Dr. Morrell, I came after you because... Well, that is to say,
Your intuition warned you that something like this might happen?
Not that exactly. There was something I wanted to tell the waiter, but it's completely escaped my mind.
Then it couldn't have been very important, could it?
I'm afraid this business about Baroness Beauville has rather shaken me. My head's spinning round.
I understand.
And now this lift business. Oh, excuse me a moment. Oh,
Dr. Morell.
Yes?
I just wanted to make sure that waiter wasn't hanging about trying to listen.
You appear to have something on your mind.
Perhaps I shouldn't mention this, but...
Whenever anybody says that to me, it inevitably means that they should and will.
Yes, of course, you're right. It's about the waiter.
He seems to be finding himself curiously involved with disaster.
Not a very good type. It was the manager who took him on, and I didn't like to say what I knew about him.
What did you know about him?
I recognized him when he applied for the job. He was at the same hotel I was at before I came here.
At Geneva, in Switzerland?
Yes. But, well, how did you know?
He happened to pass on that information to me just now.
Did he? Did he happen to mention that he was kicked out because one of the residents complained about him? That he'd stolen some money from our bedroom?
I rather fancy that had eluded his memory.
I'll bet it had. Although, I must admit, nothing was proved against him. The woman was an eccentric and may have made it all up. That's why I kept quiet when he came here for a job.
Well, that was very generous-minded of you.
But he's a shifty-eyed specimen, and not even a very good waiter. What else did he have to say?
Well, his story was exactly the reverse of yours. According to him, it was you who left under a cloud.
He told you that? Well, of all...
Now, don't let it concern you unduly. I've already dismissed it from my mind. It has no bearing on the present situation.
Yes, that's all very well, but...
You can explain the matter to the manager and leave him to take whatever action he thinks proper.
Yes, but there's something else. My reason for being in Baroness Bovio's bedroom just now.
You said you thought you heard someone.
No, it wasn't that. The truth is, I saw the waiter go in through the door from the corridor after he had left you.
Indeed?
I waited round the corner until he came out again. Then I appeared, pretending I hadn't spotted him.
And what did you discover when you yourself went into the bedroom?
Oh, it seemed the same as it had been before. But what was he doing there? I thought it suspicious. Only I didn't want to mention it before the others.
Quite the model of discretion, Mr. Winter, aren't you?
What was he nosing around for?
Possibly merely because he's inquisitive, with a tendency towards the morbid. Not an unusual or unknown characteristic.
Oh. Oh, perhaps you're right, Doctor.
Miss Frail will inform you that I make a practice of it, Mr. Winter.
And do you have to call in the police?
Certainly.
Yes. Yes, I suppose you must.
Now, if you'll forgive me, I must go down to reception.
I'd better get something done about that.
Wigmore Hotel reception. Good morning, madam. Yes? Certainly a table for two. Good morning, madam. Oh, good morning, sir. Can I help you?
I wonder if you could let me have the Baroness Beauville's mail. I am Dr. Morell.
Oh, there weren't any letters for her this morning.
No?
I just looked under B. There's nothing.
Just look again, will you?
Why, I...
The pigeonhole B.
Oh, there is a letter there. I must have missed that. And it's for the Baroness Beauville, too. Oh, it's nothing important. There you are.
Thank you.
Only from a theatre agency. Excuse me. Wigmore Hotel reception, yes? Oh, yes, sir. We have your reservation for next Thursday. Yes? I'll tell the manager. Good morning, sir. Or was there something else, Dr. Morell?
Tell me, did the Baroness arrange about her alarm call last night with you?
That's right, just before I went off duty.
What time was that?
Just after 9 o'clock. She phoned down that her alarm clock had gone wrong or something. So would I give her a ring at 8?
Was that her usual time for getting up?
I didn't know about that.
When she spoke to you, did she sound quite normal?
Oh, yes. Ever so normal.
She didn't give you the impression that she was at all upset?
Oh, no. She was perfectly ordinary.
Has she ever arranged for you to give her an alarm call before?
No. Not that I can remember. Oh, she may have done that with the night porter. He takes over when I go off.
Thank you.
Only too glad to help, I'm sure.
Well, in that case, perhaps you'd do just one other thing for me.
What's that, Doctor?
Just get me Scotland Yard on the phone, will you?
Ah, there you are, Dr. Morell. The coffee's just arrived.
Good.
Shall I pour you some?
I was just about.
Oh, that's all right. There you are, Doctor.
Thank you.
Find out all you wanted from reception.
I think so.
And the police. You told them...
We've had a word over the telephone.
Dr. Morell.
Yes, Miss Frail.
There's that look on your face.
Indeed.
It may be some time since I've helped you with your cases, but I haven't forgotten that expression when you know the answer.
Do you know...
Doctor, you haven't drunk your coffee.
A pity, my dear Miss Frail, that you've not lately had the opportunity
of lending your assistance in my investigation.
I have missed working with you, I must admit.
You flatter me. Had you been, you would have appreciated the trend of my studies of the criminal mind, which have led me more and more to the conclusion that I've reached, which is that a murderer, to take an example suitable to this case, is possessed with an inner compulsion forcing him to destroy not only his victim, but himself.
How fascinating. Your coffee, Dr. Morel.
Yes, it's getting cold.
Do go on, Doctor.
Thank you, Miss Frail. One manifestation of this inner compulsion is the criminal's obsessive urge to return to the scene of the crime. By so doing, he may thus reveal his guilt and so accomplish his self-destruction. Now, concerning Baroness Beauville's murder, another characteristic emerges. It was revealed to me by the contents of this letter addressed to the Baroness, which I've taken the liberty of opening. It's from a ticket agency, acknowledging a phone call yesterday cancelling two tickets for tonight's opera. Who cancelled those tickets? Who but the person who knew the Baroness would be unable to attend because she would be dead? Who, in fact, but her extremely efficient secretary?
Oh, no, not Beauvoir!
Yes, you, Mademoiselle Roland! Winter! Stop her drinking that coffee! Mademoiselle Roland!
Mademoiselle,
she's collapsed.
Oh, Mademoiselle, what's happened?
You're too late, I fear, Miss Frail. I saw her earlier in that mirror there drop a poison capsule in my coffee. Oh. And from the almost instantaneous effect, it must have been prussic acid.
Well, Mr. Winter, it's Scotland Yard.
Oh, the police,
Why, it's Inspector Hood. Hello, Inspector. You remember me when I was with Dr. Morel? Hello? This is Dr. Morel's house. Oh, hello, Inspector Hood. Yes, I see. Thank you. Goodbye. That was Inspector Hood, Dr. Morel. They're holding the post-mortem this afternoon at 5 o'clock.
Thank you, Miss Frail.
Quite like old times, answering your phone and chatting to Inspector Hood at Scotland Yard.
It's very kind of you to come back here with me.
I wanted to see that you had a good cup of coffee. Oh, I suppose I ought to be returning to the hotel. That was awfully interesting, what you were saying about why a person commits murder.
I'm glad it appeals to you.
All borne out, too, by what happened. Mademoiselle Roland did destroy herself. I suppose Baroness Beauville had threatened to cut her out of her will or something.
A possible motive, Miss Frail. That will be cleared up by Scotland Yard.
And to think that she might have murdered you.
Her last desperate throw. It convinced me, of course, of what I had up till then only suspected.
But you said it was the letter from the ticket agency. The fact that she'd cancelled the tickets was proof.
On the contrary, the tickets were there. Mademoiselle Roland hadn't cancelled them. I merely bluffed her into thinking that she had.
Oh, Dr. Morel, that makes it even more marvelous. Oh, I simply can't go back to that musty old dump.
Well, as it happens, Miss Frail, I rather fancy Miss Shawcroft may be leaving.
Oh, Dr. Morel, it would be wonderful to work for you again.
That was the first adventure of a new series featuring Ernest Dudley's famous character, Dr. Morel, and, of course, his secretary, Miss Frail. The artists taking part were Dr. Morel, Cecil Parker, Miss Frail, Sheila Sim, hotel waiter, Sidney Taffler, Mademoiselle Roland, Tonya Byrne, Anthony Winter, Hugh Manning, hotel receptionist, Molly Rankin, Miss Shawcroft, Kathleen Hill. A Case for Dr. Morel was produced for the BBC by Leslie Bridgemont.
Our Hour of Crime for this week, but I'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. And between now and then, you can find more from Inspector Thorne Dr. Morrell, past episodes of this show and all the other Relic Radio shows, there's thousands of them, at relicradio.com. You can find our Shoutcast stream there and our donate button. We'd like to help support this and all of the shows. Got some downloadable collections for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always appreciated and helpful. Those donations make it all happen. My thanks, as always, to those who have been able to help out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.